start with the public hearing on Senate Bill 5508, the fee bill. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is Debbie Lincoln, Deputy Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And the first item on the agenda is Senate Bill 5508, which is our fee bill. This bill arises from, I think it was Senate Bill 333 in about the 1995 session, which stipulated that agencies who had administrative authority to increase fees during the biennium would bring those increases back or changes back to the legislature in a bill, in bill form, during the following legislative session, and that's what happened with this bill. As you recall, DCBS is entirely supported by fees and assessments, and because we are closely linked to the economy, we constantly monitor those fee levels to ensure that we are raising fees to cover the cost of program only and not to build up big ending balances. There have been times when we have reduced fees to ensure that we don't build up big ending balances. But this biennium, we are looking to increase some fees. I think most importantly, we work very closely with stakeholders and the businesses who pay these fees to monitor the amounts of fees and to ensure their support for any fee increases we do have to make. All of these fee changes have been reviewed and some approved by various boards and stakeholder groups that are affected and have gone through the DAS approval process as well during the biennium. We have program people here to speak to specific fees. If you have questions, I won't ask them up unless you do have questions. They generally are, the first several pages are building codes fees. Building codes has something like 500 fees that it monitors and assesses, you see here reflected some of those, including the boiler and pressure vessel program, some fees in the manufactured dwelling program. There are plumbing program fees, electrical program fees, elevator program fees, and fees related to the Building Codes Tri-County Service Center. We also have fees that are administered by the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, starting on page 4 at the bottom, a pawnbroker's program fee, and collection agency's program fee. And then the last division involved on page 5 is the insurance division. One other piece there, we do need another fee that the issue arose after this bill was printed, and so we have an amendment to offer. And I think they have this handed. It's attached to the back page of your packet, which is the fee matrix, and it is a fee relating to medical gas systems regulation in the Building Codes Division. We request your approval of the bill and be happy to answer any questions you have about any individual fees or our funding mechanisms as a whole.
Which is the fee matrix?
There's a fee matrix. The actual bill is in here, but because the fee bill is kind of awkward to read, this makes the top explains the fee change and when it was adopted for a little bit of clarification.
Those that were adopted, Madam Chair, if I may ask to the fiscal staff, those that were effective 10-1-01 to avoid fund deficits, when we're approving a replacement insignia per insignia from $25 to $50, board approved increase 10-1-01 to be to avoid fund deficits. That's already been proposed, and that's what is now just being authorized. That's on page 2 of the midway, on page 2 of 5.
It's already been implemented, you mean?
Yeah, is it to be implemented, or are they already collecting it?
Chair Clarno, Representative Butler, it is to be implemented. Some of the fees on this list are prospective in terms of these are fees that the department has projected they need to be raised to build into the budget.
Actually, according to Senate Bill, whatever it was, 33 or whatever,
agencies are allowed to increase fees during the interim, but require legislative ratification of those fee adjustments, and the Department of Administrative Services approves the interim adjustments. So when you see a date during the interim, those fees have already been raised, and they are seeking ratification of that fee increase from the legislature.
And do we, in legislative fiscal, I assume the Department of Administrative Service has, Madam Chair, if I may, the Department of Administrative Services has reviewed the resource, has reviewed the type of fee that's being imposed, the necessity of the fee, the work in relationship to the fee, so that it would be, there is some nexus between the fee increase and the actual expenditure that's going out of the department.
That's correct, Commissioner
Butler. Madam Chair, Representative Butler, whenever there's a request for fee increase, we look at the need for the increase. One question we ask is there a stakeholder support? So we do that analysis before approving any increases.
But for instance, and again, this is just taking this from page two, do we know in each instance when the last time these fees were increased? When was the insignia, either the insignia fee or the replacement insignia fee established at $25, and why is it now 100% increase, for instance, to $50? Was it done 10 years ago, 15 years ago? How many sins of past generations are we being asked to make up for?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I can ask Joe Brewer to come up and respond to that question. I don't have that information myself.
Oh, he's the guy with the insignia. Right?
He's the insignia guy, yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joe Brewer. I'm the administrator at the Building Codes Division. Representative Butler, we have, as Debbie's pointed out, a number of fees in all of our program areas. Frankly, I can't recall exactly when the last time the insignia fee was raised. I believe it was 1991. I want to check on that and get that information back to the committee. What we do, Representative Butler, through the chair, Representative Butler, is try to review all of our fees and create a situation where we're recovering as much, you know, as closely as to the expense related to it as possible. So we go through that analysis and try and ensure that the fees are reasonable and necessary for the activity that's being conducted.
Follow up.
So I'll have to get back to you with the specific date.
Thank you. And the manufactured dwelling permit fee going from $105 to $160, that's about a 50% increase, a little better than a 50% increase. When was it last increased? And again, are we trying to be making up now for sins of past generations?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, again, I'd like to get back to you with the specific date of when it was last increased. I can relate to you that the division went through an analysis. This is related to our inspection cost for the setup of a manufactured home. We went through an analysis of jurisdictions similar in size to the state's jurisdictions and found that our setup fee was by far and away far less than any other jurisdictions, and we did further analysis, learned that we weren't recovering our cost, and again tried to adjust the fee to address that situation. Even at $160, the state is well below most jurisdictions in terms of the cost of the setup of a manufactured home.
But Madam Chair, the intention is to recover the cost, I assume, in this overall process, not to just come up to some other jurisdiction.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that's absolutely correct. We went through an analysis of how much time we spent on average traveling to the job site for the inspection, how much time we expected the inspector to spend at the job site, and then simply multiply that times our hourly rate to put an inspector in the field.
Madam Chair, I would say this. Some of these fees are $2.50 increase on a $25 fee, which would be a 10%. Some might be a little bit lesser and a little bit larger than that. I have concerns when we're asked to come in and increase fees by 50% because it hasn't been examined in the last 10 years. That's a very difficult, that's difficult for my constituents to swallow. And, you know, they're already having to swallow the potential of a one-third increase in utility bills. And when we try and jam this kind of stuff down their throat, then it, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, we may have been lazy and didn't slothful or whatever and didn't get it done for four different legislative sessions before this particular time, but I don't know why we then come forward and are the ones that say, we should be held accountable for 50% plus increases in some of these fees. It's pretty difficult if you said, well, it's mostly the fact that gasoline prices are up a third over last year, then maybe that's a factor. But I'd like to know the elements of some of these high percentage increases and exactly when it was that they were last implemented and why it is that we're now getting around 10 years later to just saying, whoops, we should have increased this a long, long time ago. I do see other fees that haven't been increased for 10 years that are being increased 1% per year from 1991, for instance, the certificate of competency examination. From $100 to $110 from 1991 to the year 2001. So I feel, Madam Chair, members of the committee and legislative fiscal staff and folks, that I just have a difficult time. I don't know, again, the pawnbrokers from $150 to $1,000, basically what you're saying is, you know, maybe we want to get rid of some pawnbrokers.
Representative Butler, Debbie, or would someone like to
respond? Well, let me, for the whole fee management process that we go through, we do work very closely, as I said, with the industries. And the building codes folks, boards, for example, approve the fee increases. The industry supports them. We try very hard not to raise fees on a regular, every biennium or every year basis because the volatility of that is difficult for the industry to manage. So we do, in some cases, wait for a while, you know, have some time in between fee increases, and then we do have to do some catch-up. The only other thing I can say is that program by program, as we analyze these, costs vary a little bit. Some fees don't have to go up as high because they don't involve travel, and as Representative Butler pointed out, the kinds of cost increases that are involved in those. The pawnbroker's fee, there's staff here to explain that, was agreed upon with the pawnbrokers, and the problem with that one is that the pawnbroker's program at 50 or 150, whatever the fee was, wasn't supporting itself and was running a deficit, and it has to support itself because there aren't very many pawnbrokers. And as we went through quite a bit of legislative discussion in the 99 session about whether buy and sell are pawnbrokers, whether they ought to be registered or not, the agreement was that the pawnbrokers would fund the program sufficiently for the division to do its regulation of people who are acting as pawnbrokers but aren't registered. So this reflects the pawnbroker's desire to have an adequate amount of regulation and investigation in their program, and that's why that fee has jumped so significantly.
There may be others here, but I didn't see any others yet. On page 5 of 5, car rental agency license fee, supposed to be $200, and that's because of a 99 legislative action, I take it. I don't see others that are a result of legislative action, but that one is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's my understanding, yes.
And there was no old fee, just this is a new fee that's going to be.
That's a new fee, yes.
Madam Chair,
Representative Butler.
I have a question that's related to that car rental agency license fee. The succinct statement, new regulation, Chapter 485, all programs must pay for the cost of regulation. Is that state law?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, yes, it is for our programs. We have no other fund source, and we can't mix funds. so the pawnbrokers can't pay to regulate the auto rental agencies.
So each program must stand on its own.
That's right.
So when you've had a program that's cost $150 in licensing fee and it moves to $1,000, then is some of that to recapture monies back into the agencies, the agency that perhaps had been expended on expenditures that should not have been expended?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, in that particular case, it's because the industry wants increased regulation. We had that, the pawnbrokers program had been little more than a registering program. We were unable to do any kind of regulatory in-the-field investigations of people who are acting as pawnbrokers but weren't registered. And this is something that the police, state police and local police, are very interested in having us do, is that kind of in-the-field investigation to ensure that there aren't people acting illegally, taking stolen goods, those kinds of things. So the significant increase is to increase the program level so that we can do that kind of investigation in the field, which we haven't been doing in the past because the fee was too low.
And so, excuse me, just one follow-up, if I may, Madam Chair. So all 38 pawnbrokers that are licensed presently in the state are willing to come forward with $38,000 to start a law enforcement program within their business?
They are Madam Chair, Representative Butler, they're willing to increase their fees so that we can go out and find people who are acting illegally. And if we find them acting illegally, we can go through our administrative process to find that they're dealing in stolen goods or crossing into criminal activity, then we are able then to turn them over to the police and the DAs.
Final question in that regard. The state police presently, if they go to a buy-sell shop and there is no license, are they presently fining them when the state police arrive?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, the state police can turn them over to us. We'll investigate and be sure that they are required to be registered, and we will fine them if they are working without registration.
How many have there been that have been fined of the buy-sell shops, you know, and how much are the fines?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, can I ask Jim Kruger to come up? He's the program manager for that group, and he knows the detail.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Jim Kruger. I'm the program manager for the pawnbroker program. And Representative Butler, we do work cooperatively with the police as well as with the federal law enforcement agencies that have some regulatory authority over these people. In 98, 99, for example, we worked with the Redmond Police Department and successfully put an unlicensed pawnbroker out of business. In 99, 2000...
Excuse me, can I just ask a question in that regard? And he was... This pawnbroker that you put out of business, he was dealing, buying and selling stolen goods at that point, is that what we, or just hadn't paid his $150?
Had not gone through the registration process.
So we put him out of business rather than offering a license, or he just didn't want to get a license?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, we offered them the opportunity to get licensed, and we were negotiating that process with their attorney. And they opted at that point to get out of the business because they simply weren't making any money, not because the licensing was that burdensome.
How much was the fine at that point?
At that point, we had not negotiated a fine. It would have been a settlement. What we normally do is try to get money back to consumers who were overcharged, and we'll reduce our fine if we can do that.
And how much had been proposed as a fine, if I may ask?
Well, we were looking at a year's worth of transactions. They were overcharging consumers. The pawnbroker law requires no more than 3%, and they were charging like 7 or 8%, so it would have been 50% of their yearly business, and it would have been in the tens of thousands of dollars.
I had someone over here, and then I'll go to Senator Dukes. Representative Hayden.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. In the time that I've been in the process, it seems that we often see these requests for fee increases by one industry or another, and my perception over the years is that it's been a self-serving kind of thing. I think that's an inordinate amount. I think it would set up a monopoly. Even though you and I may not patronize pawnbrokers, there are many people that need to. They're on the edge and they need to do that. And by limiting the number available by such an extraordinary license fee, we clearly exclude the small businessmen and women from going into this business. I think it would be an exclusionary fee. And Madam Chair, just speaking generally, I don't see any reason to raise these fees more than the rate of inflation. The Fed today is trying desperately to manage the economy so they don't plunge into a recession, and I don't see any reason for us to be raising fees 10 or 20 or 30%.
Senator Dukes and then Representative Johnson.
Well, I'm just a little confused. You had somebody that you were going to fine roughly $10,000, or thinking about fining about $10,000.
Tens of thousands of dollars.
Because they were charging a much higher interest rate than the law allows them to have. They weren't paying the fees, so they didn't have that cost of overhead. And they went broke.
Madam Chair, Representative Senator Duke, that's correct. Mm-hmm.
I think, Senator, if you realize that if they could have paid $150 licensing fee versus tens of thousand dollars of fines they were facing, they went out of business because of the tens of thousand dollars worth of fines.
Well, it sounds okay. Maybe that was it. He didn't say that part. I was trying. This must have been the world's worst businessman. when they're making that kind of money and they can still go broke.
I thought we were going to keep my family out of this.
I don't think it was necessarily a matter of going broke. I think if you go broke, if you had to pay the tens of thousands of dollars worth of fees.
Oh, okay. That's the piece I didn't understand.
Representative Johnson.
I apologize, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for arriving late. And forgive me if this question has been asked. Is there any outreach mechanism to the pawnbrokers? I come from a world that relies heavily on advisory boards and pays attention to the input of those advisory boards because those are the people being served, whether it's by a state agency or a not-for-profit or however. They're the customers. Do you have a mechanism that allows you to have touched base with folks that are going to have this kind of a fee increase where they provided some input to the agency?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, as a matter of fact, we went through a formal rulemaking process to do this fee with a hearing, and we had the input of the industry. In addition to that, we meet with the Pawnbroker Association usually twice a year and talk about the program and discuss the problems we have with enforcing the law. I might add by way of background that while there are 38 licensed pawnbrokers, there are approximately 200 to 225 unlicensed operations that are conducting pawn transactions. Our difficulty is the language of the law is not clear on who really needs to be licensed, and we have, as an agency, approached the legislature three or four times in the last 10 years to try and have that clarified and have not been successful doing that. We rely on an attorney general's opinion that says that if a buy-sell store purchases merchandise and agrees to hold it for a period of time for redemption, that's a pawn transaction. And we'll go forward with those enforcement procedures for those unlicensed activities, but it's a very expensive process and very difficult to achieve.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Yes, Representative Johnson.
Thank you for the information. The piece that you didn't provide for me was what was the testimony about. You did rulemaking, and you're relying on an AG opinion. When your customers, who are the pawnbrokers and the Pawnbrokers Association, came in to testify, what did they share with you?
They shared that they wanted increased enforcement, and as we bring more of these unlicensed operations on board, we'll be able to ratchet those fees down.
Did you translate increased enforcement into this level of fee increase? I mean, did you say to them, if you want increased enforcement, you are looking at a jump of from $150 to $1,000 and all the heads went up and down?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, they clearly knew what the impact would be, the fiscal impact. We told they had the figures in front of them.
They clearly knew and they were supportive, or they clearly knew and they were unhappy?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, both. Nobody would like to have a fee increase of that amount, but because they want enforcement, they swallowed it.
Do I have further questions? Representative Butler and then Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, Jim, what is your position with the department?
In the department, I'm the program manager for the non-depository programs that include the pawnbrokers as well as 8 or 9 other small programs.
Is this your picture in the brochure here? Is this?
I hope not, sir.
Okay, it just looked like you, and I thought, good heavens and earth, he's in the OMAP consulting as well, and it looked like you, and I thought, good heavens and earth, how many places do you work in the department? Or did they just use you as a good stand-in?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that's a good point, because when we were downsizing the appraisers board, the administrator left, we didn't hire a new one, and we put the appraisers underneath Jim. So he has been working 50% of the time running the appraisers board,
right.
And the other 100% of his time he's been doing these other programs, so he does get around.
Excellent. Gets good exposure, whether it's in this program or not. But I looked at that and I thought, that's got to be Jim Kruger right there.
He's got
a look-alike in the brochure. Thank you very much.
Representative Hayden.
Well, yeah, I would just comment that 38 people in an industry probably aren't the universe. I think that we would have to consider all those people who in the future might want to enter the industry. And they weren't in the room, and they might not like to pay $1,000. They might think that $150 annual license fee it would be more appropriate. So, you know, I think that they should have a voice too in this process. And I continue to think that we're focusing on a $1,000 increase because it's big. You know, we can see it. And I looked at the $60 an hour for travel, and I guess you could justify that at 50 cents a mile. But I really don't see any reason to, across the board, raise the fees. Many of them are doubling. Most of them are far in excess of the rate of inflation. So,
Debbie, what I'm going to do is we're having public testimony tomorrow. And if we could have some of these folks, if there's someone that would be willing to come, like from the building codes, the boiler people, manufactured dwelling people, pond brokers.
And we have it pull that together.
Any of the folks that are in these pages, we'd appreciate maybe a little testimony from them.
We'll do that. Thank you, Madam Chair. That would be very helpful.
Senator Dukes.
How many people are in the pawnbrokers section?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, we have used 0.6 FTE. There is a mandate in the law that the pawnbrokers be examined annually. Those are financial examiners, and they are 0.6. Actually, it's two persons, 0.3 each.
And if this $1,000 a year fee goes through, how many will there be?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, we would ratchet up the staffing at level as it is needed as the numbers of licensees increase. In the non-depository programs, we have a half a dozen financial examiners, most of whom are cross-trained in all of the programs, and we use them and allocate their time as they are used.
Currently? I mean, so if there's 0.6 FTE, but you're also using some other folks who are cross-trained?
Senator Dukes, let me clarify this. We have 6 people approximately who are financial examiners, and I have cross-trained them in all of the non-depository programs so that we have coverage in case one of them is ill or is on leave.
Okay, so they would just be replacing one of those 2 people who was a 0.3 FTE.
As they were needed, that is correct.
Okay.
If the numbers of licensees doubled, we would probably increase the FTE to 0.8 and look for efficiencies in the other programs so that we didn't have to seek additional FTE.
You must have some feel, and I don't recall what the number was, but you said earlier how many unlicensed pawnbrokers were out there. So you must have a feel for how many new licensees you're going to get if you have
and your focus appears to be on the folks who are unlicensed rather than the ones who are licensed. So I guess I'm trying to get a feel for what your workload going to be, what your FTE going to look like if we increase this fee.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, we estimate, and the buy-sell stores agree, that there are probably 200 people that are purchasing personal property with an agreement to hold it for a period of time, which under the Attorney General's opinion would make them a pawnbroker. If all 200 become licensed under the Pawnbroker Act, it's likely we would have to add at least 1.5 FTE. Your observation on the emphasis is correct. However, we do have a mandate to examine licensees at least once a year. Those examinations, depending on the complexity of the business and the size of the business, can take anywhere from a half a day to a day and a half. And we would expect, as new licensees came on board, that we would be able to absorb it up to a certain point with existing staff, but beyond that, probably, depending on how fast they came in, probably next biennium we would be before you for another FTE.
At this point, I'm going to ask if there's anyone from any of these that is affected by any of these fee bills that would like to come forward today. Jim, did you raise your hand? Please come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim Marquis, on behalf of the Oregon Collectors Association. I'll be very brief, but I don't want to talk about pawnbrokers. It's not my area of expertise, but there is an increase in here for the collection agency program, and we have thoroughly reviewed that proposal and fully support it. The industry supports it, and I represent probably 70% of the licensees under that program. And I would just add to that Mr. Krueger has a wide variety of programs to regulate. This mechanism that we use to regulate those smaller programs, I think, is very cost effective. As he pointed out, there are six people there in terms of inspectors. They're cross-trained so that all of these smaller regulatory programs are sharing those people. And many of these programs couldn't support one inspector by themselves. So this really works, I think, to the benefit of all the programs, and I think the department does an excellent job.
So thank you, Jim.
Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Jim. The registration fee for the agency, collection agency, goes from $75 up
$125.
To $120, $45 increase, 60%. How many years has it been since that has increased?
It's been almost 10 years.
So since 1991 then.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, yeah, I think it's been about 10 years. And frankly, we look at states around us and what the industry is paying for licensing fees in those other states, and we look awfully good compared to other states because, again, I think, of the cost effectiveness of the way in which we regulate in this state. So
thank you, Jim. Any further questions? I would just say, before we close the public hearing on 5508, Debbie, if there's people that represent these various groups from a distance, please just have them fax us, if that's all right with the committee, have them fax us a little background that they support this and why.
Yes, Madam Chair, we'll do that. Most of these groups have representatives in the building, so I think we can get a few people in tomorrow morning, but we'll get you all that information.
Thank you very much. And I really think on a fee bill like this, when we're looking at groups that affect it possibly in our area, or that what we're doing is going to increase them dramatically, some correspondence saying they support it would help us get through this.
Thank you. Well,
thank
be
you.
Sure you get that.
And Satish, did you want to say anything on this fee bill before we move the public hearing on it?
So, Madam Chair, like the Department of Administrative Services reviews all fee increases, and as I mentioned earlier, we asked them if there's any support from the stakeholders, and the fund balances, and all of these were approved by DAS.
That will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 55. 5508 and open a work session on Senate Bill 5507.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you should have a handout in front of you that looks like this. And what I would like to do is begin to walk you through the recommendations in that handout. Starting with the Workers' Compensation Board, we are recommending that you approve a current service level of 16,187,900 other funds and 98 positions and 97.5 FTE. You can see those numbers on the spreadsheet that's attached on page 2 of 8. Mr. Chair, procedurally, would you like me to work my way through all of the recommendations for each of the program areas and then get a vote of the committee?
I think that, let's see, this would take us to current service level, the first bulletin.
Right.
To the 16,187,900. And on the walk, is that?
Yes, on page 2, it's the first shaded area. Page 2.
Okay. With in the absence of Senator Carno, why don't we just go ahead with your recommendations so we'll have a quorum on the...
Oh, that's true. We can't...
Right.
Actually, we can't actually have a work session right now. I think because she's not in the room, we need to have continue this as a public hearing and then move into work session.
I thought you could discuss, just couldn't vote.
I believe you can't have a work session unless you have a quorum present.
Oh.
Okay, I'm gonna gavel us back into a public hearing portion of it on 5507, and we'll continue to take recommendations or receive recommendations from Legislative Fiscal Office.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and then I will just walk my way all the way through these and then ask for a vote on each of the final recommendations when Senator Carno returns. For the Workers' Compensation Board, the only reduction that is being recommended is a 1% out-of-state travel reduction, which will be a standard reduction for all agencies. That reduction includes both travel and out-of-state training expense. And with that, Legislative Fiscal is recommending approval of a budget of 16,187,683 other funds for the Workers' Compensation Board. And 98 positions and 97.5 FTE, essentially current service level for the board. For the Workers' Compensation Division, the recommendations are as follows. Approve the revised current service level of 29,610,457 other funds and 3,250,221 non-limited other funds and 238 positions and 237.46 FTE. You can find this on page 4. This includes a combined reduction of 182,153 for PERS and the standard rate reductions, and a reduction of $831,029 in 5 positions in FTE to adjust for reduced revenues in package 090. Legislative Fiscal is recommending approval of Policy Option Package 131, the Information Technology Support, which is $281,096 other funds and 2 positions and FTE. This recommendation was presented to the Subcommittee on Advancing E-Government, which has approved this package, with the attached budget note. The budget note is as follows. The Department of Consumer and Business Services is directed to report to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology no later than January 2003 on the progress of information technology initiatives within the Workers' Compensation Division. The report will include the status of the electronic data interchange, electronic government, and process improvement initiatives. We're recommending approval of a reduction of $740 in out-of-state travel, and with those adjustments, we are recommending approval of a budget of $29,890,813 other funds and $3,250,221 non-limited other funds and 240 positions and 239.46 FTEs. Are there any questions so far?
I just had one question, if I may, Robin. That's the current service level for the workers' compensation division.
Our recommendation is, Mr. Chair, is an adjustment to the current service level.
Okay, all right. And so that adjusted. Okay, so that must come down to the very bottom of page 4 with the 239.46 FTE.
Correct.
And 29, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to follow through to see the adjustments. And the only adjustment there is the 1% out-of-state travel reduction.
There's also a policy option package, Mr. Chair, the technology.
The technology, and that's 131.
Yes,
131. Representative Johnson, recognize?
It's not just you that's a little bit lost. Would you help me get on the same page as well?
If you would turn to, I'm on the workers' comp division. That is located on page 4 of 8. On the spreadsheet, the attached spreadsheet. And if you would look at the first highlighted area, that's the current service level. I discussed the adjustments that were made in the base to reduce the current service level, and that includes the $831,000 reduction in staffing and FTE. So you get to a revised current service level of 32,860,678.
And then the 131 technology is
policy option packages below the current service level.
Right, and the LFO adjustment to 1% is below the current service level there. The concern that I had, were you able to follow that?
Yes, thank you very much.
The concern that I had was that in some of these we had much greater travel than in others, Robin. Is 1%, I know in a different committee we were a little more draconian than that, actually to the extent of unscheduling some. I have two questions. One regarding unscheduling, and number two was, do we obtain any S&S savings in accordance with the request of the co-chairs here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the co-chair adjustment is to the general fund. But in the case of this agency, in any case, we are taking significant reductions because of the revenue shortfall.
Mm-hmm.
So you will see that in the base there is an $830,000 reduction in addition to the assessment reductions that have been made.
And that was the five positions that we talked about previously.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Further
questions, Representative Johnson?
And just to follow on the line of conversation that you've just had, I want to make sure that I understand it. There are revenue reductions. There are concomitant personnel reductions. I want to make sure that there are also reductions in the S&S and the out-of-state travel. I don't want this budget balanced on the backs of people.
Yes, those budget reductions include all of the associated services, supplies, travel. If you remember the travel spreadsheet that we looked at yesterday, you saw those travel reductions as part of these reduction packages.
Thank you.
I just had one other item in that regard, if I may, and that was that I would like to know that we're
Okay.
that the reduction, the $831,000 reduction, is going to be elastic enough, and I recognize this is an other funds agency, and so if this is too draconian, then they'll be back before the E-Board to implement. But if it's not sufficient, then within their own by their own motion, they can, as fees are reduced, then they reduce the size of their operation.
You may want to have Ms. Lincoln verify that for you on the record, but that is in case, in fact, they have no other funding sources. So if, in fact, their resources do not meet the expectations, they will be either reducing their programs even further, or they will be looking for an additional adjustment, which would take actions of the Management Labor Advisory Committee and input from management and labor.
And we did see some proposed budget cuts or proposed budget reductions if necessary.
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, yes, that's absolutely right. And if we don't have money in the bank, we can't support our folks. We can't borrow from any place. So we will definitely keep a very close watch on it. And cut further if we need to. And as Robin says, we are back in the fall to the E-Board with an assessment recommendation, so you all will have an opportunity to look at that whole situation at that point as well.
Madam Chair, I feel like I should give all of these caveats before I say anything here. Caveats to say I haven't been able to think straight for about 3 days. And I've managed to take two packages in this whole budget and transpose them. But still, in all of that, and that's my way of saying I probably should have said a bunch of this stuff earlier had I been handling it better. I'm having a very difficult time with eliminating the three program representative positions. I've done my level best over the 15 years I've been in this building to avoid workers' comp issues, and every so often I'm on a committee where I have to deal with them, and I don't know how much I've learned over the years, but getting people, injured workers, back to work is very important to me. And one of the more successful things we have done over time is go in with workers that would not otherwise have been able to go to work and modify their workplaces, work with the employer, and who probably couldn't afford, especially in the case of small employers, could not afford to do the work themselves. And according to this, we're going to save $1 million for worksite modifications. And to me, sometimes these modifications are pretty small. I mean, we're never building a new wing under the office building. To me, that's a lot of money, and it represents people who will be, and we all get phone calls from these folks from time to time, it represents people who will no longer be able to return to work. And the real apology for me, it hits the point where I want to know what else is in that budget that needs to be cut, and had I been clearer-headed for the last few days, perhaps I would already know that. But I'm not prepared to vote these folks out. To me, that is just, and I understand the part of if we don't have the money, we can't go there, and I'm willing to make cuts. I am not convinced that these are the folks that need to go down the road.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we met with, Senator Carno and I met with the co-chairs of the Management Labor Advisory Committee to verify the analysis that they had done in terms of the priorities that committee had set in terms of where there should be reductions and what the appropriate level of assessment increase was. And they verified that this was the first on their list of reductions. That their assessment was that the benefit of that program was not equivalent to other programs that are provided through the department that assist injured workers.
Does that help, Senator?
Only a little bit, Madam Chair. I have a great deal of respect for AMLAC, but they requested to be appointed to a different position than I did.
And I'd simply say, Madam Chair, that I guess I should add some of the same caveats that Senator Duke said. I apologize for not being here for the last couple of days. Other duties keep me from being here all the time.
But not having heard MLAC's explanation in this area, and certainly I'm not not convinced as Senator Dukes is that this is the best place that cuts can be made.
Thank you, Representative Gardner. I think it's 9:30 in our break time. We're going to take a brief recess and go back into work session in 5 minutes.